Good evening, everyone, in our audience and out on the TV. Last time, Steve said, Nita, start looking at the people around the room, too, you know. Oh, thank you.
Ask if they can hear you.
Can you hear me okay? Okay.
A little better with the hearing. With the volume.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Mary? Mary Margaret?
Yeah.
Are you saying that the volume needs to be up, or I need to talk a little louder?
My volume's on full. If your volume could be better, yes.
Ours is too. And your head's already the full screen.
Okay.
Any closer would be looking at your tonsils.
Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. So here we are. It's kind of fun, isn't it? New adventure. Never know what's going to happen. But we'll get it down. It'll run smoother sooner or later. But tonight we'll continue our lessons on thinking about things that open the possibility that can help us build and sustain our meditation. And so we have gotten ourselves into the one called self-compassion. And this is my second lesson on self-compassion, because I think it's really important. I think if there is a couple of things that our Western mind needs a little bit more of, it is self-compassion. And probably the stillness is the hardest part. I don't know. I'm just making that up. But it's hard for us. And self-compassion is certainly something that is new to us in some way. So that's what your homework was all about, it was designed to give us a little more insight into our own understanding of self-compassion. So I hope you did your homework, and I hope you could figure out how to score it. So don't be relying on me how to do it. I just sent you the information, now you do it. So, self-compassion, what does it do for us? Oh, it's just so much. It helps us to become our best friend. And you know what? We need to be friendly to ourselves, because that's something that we've not been conditioned to do, and it's a hindrance. And it's unnecessary. It's optional. So befriending ourselves is important. But for one thing, you know, as we well know, that in this practice, everything will come up. All the hidden stashes that we have stuffed are going to naturally arise. And a lot of it's not that easy to bring to consciousness. That's the reason we stuffed it. So we make mistakes. It's hard being a human being. And so we begin to learn and to recognize that doing it wrong or not doing it right or making mistakes, it's just a natural part of being a human being. And, you know, we're not really taught that. So, and, you know, we can stop the self-critiquing dialogue that we've all kind of grown up with, because it just keeps the suffering going. And there's the pain of not doing it right, because we really want to do it right. That's just kind of the way we are. We set our compass to become a loving and honest human being. And the fears of doing it wrong can be a huge hindrance, because we want to do it right. But we're perfectly imperfect. And so bringing that into our consciousness, allowing it to be one of the many lessons that we open to when we sit and begin to look at ourselves, begin to go within and see things that we probably haven't seen before. So our path to happiness involves self-compassion. And when we are honest about our mistakes and allow them to be who what they are, natural phenomena, we can feel the pain in our bodies, which is natural. I've already been told that there's going to be pain in life. We believe it. I think all of us have had enough in that in our lives to know that, yeah, there's pain. And we can feel the results of the pain in our bodies. It's a whole nother way of working with experiences of life that we've stuffed, that we haven't wanted to. And it's liberating. There's a huge, wonderful result to that phenomena of caring about ourselves enough to befriend ourselves, to allow ourselves the compassion and all the things that we so readily give everybody else. So we can stop the optional suffering. And we know what it is. We make a mistake, we go to our head, we try to solve it, then we just wallow in the wallowing, trying to justify, trying to analyze it, what we've done, which is fine. Some of the reflection is important, but, you know, we've gone overboard. So we begin to relate compassionately to our trip-ups. And we recognize and allow. Hello, everybody in the room. Hello, everybody on the screen. So we begin to relate compassionately with ourselves, and we begin to feel the benefits. So we recognize and allow them to be there. Hello, I just made a mistake. I forgot to look around. So Steve's over here waving at me. So, and it helps to be in such a compassionate group of people who I certainly feel safe in making a mistake.
I'm judging him.
No, that's okay. No, you are supporting the effort. And so that type of honesty opens the doors to what? Well, to the possibilities. I mean, we've been bogged down most of our lives on things that are really not that important. You know, when we step back and start reflecting on life. So the honesty puts it in front of us consciously. Here it is. And that's what our practice is all about. Here's this, here's that, here's this, here's that. And we can feel the pain in our body from the mistake, and we realize we don't have to add the dialogue. That's what is optional. That is what we want to recognize and allow. And then we want to know how it feels. We want to investigate it in our body because there is a feeling tone to that. And that's important to experience it. Because now we're experiencing it in a natural way. It has a life of its own. Let it be. So it's optional. It's the second arrow teaching, which is, if you haven't heard it before, is, yes, there is pain. We know that. But suffering is optional. And the suffering comes from how we relate to the pains. The second arrow. We shoot ourselves with more suffering. And again, this is optional. This is unnecessary. And depending upon how we relate to what we do that's wrong, it's time to look at it. It's time for us to see within ourselves directly what we're saying to ourselves. And we begin to see, once we get closer to this relationship, that it's unnecessary. But we want to, you know, grow as human beings. We want the mistakes or what we do wrong to be useful. Well, there's a big difference between harsh judgment and discriminating wisdom. So we want to bring discriminating wisdom into our mistakes. It makes them valuable. Because just judging ourselves causes just more suffering. Just labeling ourselves. Oh, you're a klutz. You know, there you go again. What would your mother say? Well, discriminating wisdom identifies what's working and what isn't. What's healthy or harmful. But it does so with our wisdom, with the wisdom, the full knowledge of the complex dynamic factors influencing the situation. There's more to it. And we can still judge our performance or achievements, either good or bad, that's okay. And we can do it without even taking it personally. But then let it be. And just because I failed in this last go around, I'm getting better at it. It doesn't mean that I'm destined to fail again. So I'm not a failure. I am learning how to do it right. And so by framing our experience in the larger context of what it means to be human, it gets bigger. It's spacious. We gain the insight that we need to learn and grow. Otherwise, we'll continue living with the suffering of trying to justify what we did. Or not even taking responsibility for what we've done. So why are we so hard on ourselves? So let's look at what research says. Research indicates that the number one reason people are harsh rather than kind toward themselves is we don't believe in self-compassion. We think it would actually undermine our motivation, turn us into slobs. But we think self-criticism is a motivator. That's kind of our mind state. And by calling ourselves all kinds of names, we think it does no harm. But it does a lot of harm. And we begin to see the harm we do to ourselves when we drop it. Because when we drop it, it's a whole different way of living. So we make mistakes and we try harder the next time. But another reason that research scientists say we hammer ourselves is because it gives us the illusion of control. And boy, do we like to feel in control. So when we criticize ourselves, we're reinforcing that idea that it's possible to avoid failure. It's not impossible. You are possible to avoid failure. It's not possible to avoid it because it's there. And a third factor that comes into play is the desire, guess what, to protect our egos. We console ourselves with the idea that, well, at least we have high standards of ourselves. I mean, how could we make these mistakes? How could we do it wrong? Especially in, you know, when you're a public figure, like when you're a principal and you have thousands of people watching you and consulting with you. It's difficult to consistently be the best that you can be. You know, you just can't always do it. So we want to have high standards, but we can't meet those. And we have to know what they are and how unnecessary they are. And we identify with the part of ourselves that knows how we should be, even if we're not there yet. The ability to keep going after failure, to pick ourselves up and try again, and stay focused on our intentions, takes a lot of grit, takes a lot of courage. Angela Duckworth, who is the leading scholar who brought scientific attention to what grit is, what it does, once said, self-compassion was one of the key factors we need to develop. And this is not even in the umbrella of the Dharma. The safety, the support, and the encouragement provided by self-compassion sets us free. Sets us free from ourselves, you know? And so research confirms what the Buddha says, that self-compassionate people have more determination and grit to stick with things, regardless of the hurdles. Why? Well, because we know we can begin again. And two, we're learning the truths of all the phenomena of nature instead of just making it up and guessing at it. You know, we know the true nature of failure or making mistakes. And we may not have had this lesson before. So self-compassion provides the clear vision needed to recognize when we need to shift course in order to reach our destination. And we can do it in a much nicer, kinder way. And what happens with our practice, whether we know it or whether we want it or not, there is this discriminating wisdom that arises with the kinds of effort that we are putting in our lives to know ourselves and to know the truth. So that discriminating awareness takes the fear out of thinking we're awful if we make a mistake. And it's just a mental factor anyway. It's not real. But discriminating awareness helps us to discriminate between correct, what's correct and what's incorrect, what's helpful and what's harmful, between what is appropriate and what is inappropriate, discriminating wisdom. So I'll close with Rumi says that our out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. It's where you finally can lie down and rest, where blessedness takes you in its arms. How did you get here to this field full of tenderness, this warm grass, where change is unceasing, and yet this utter stillness? It's the joy without a name. It's the joy without suffering. So, self-compassion, it's important. Spend some time reflecting, knowing it. And so, Ved, we get to go to the next one on our list next week, which is working with a teacher or a spiritual friend or a mentor, which we'll find, and I'll give you some ideas of just how to do that. And then getting to know the monkey mind to the point where the monkey mind, again, is a natural phenomenon that we don't have to try to control or think something's wrong with it. And so we'll dive into those two next week and then keep going through the list of things that might be helpful. Okay, with that, I'll stop. And then we'll have Randy bring his chair up. Can you bring your chair up, Randy? And we'll open it up to you. Self-compassion. Any feedback you want to give us about your, if you took the